my conclusion is that the sneaker community, everyone listening that's not a speaker, the randoms, y'all got to get a RICO going on the bot devs. They admitted to, conspiracy and DDoS attacks. Everyone in jail. If all the devs are in jail, y'all can manual shoes again. That's no the cap. Answer. That's the real answer.
No cap.
The Sock Jig Sneaker Podcast. Is Joe Fresh Goods approved? Welcome to episode 33 of the Sock Jig Sneaker Podcast. I am your host, Sock Jig. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram as well, at Sock Jig. And yes, I am Joe Fresh Goods approved. A quick recap in case you missed it on Twitter. Joe Fresh Goods had a drop on Instagram that didn't go that well. And there were some replies to him. One was by a YouTuber named Keith Adam, who said that, hey, maybe you should consider a Shopify drop with bot protection and domain change and things like that. And I replied that if you only do a couple drops a year, it doesn't really make sense to pay the $2,000 or whatever it is per month for Shopify Plus. That's the only way to get that bot protection stuff. And so if you're a store like Kith or Union and you have drops like very often, it makes sense to use that because it, you know, that feature works for your store as well. But if you're someone like Joe Fresh Goods or Salehi, where you only have a couple drops a year, it doesn't really make that much sense. So my buddy Graham from Twitter replied that, hey, he's actually been having like a drop a month lately. And my response to Graham was like, some of these releases are just ones that were moved from 2021 to this year. And then the ones that were already scheduled for 2022 have still been kept on the calendar. So the calendar is compressed is how I said it. And really, I just got that from Chris Gibbs talking about Union drops, and that's why there's like four or five Union drops, and then just applied it to Joe Fresh Goods. And his response was, you smart, that's why I like your podcast. This was supposed to be a December drop, and everybody's calendar is screwed up nowadays. So I quote tweeted that, and I said, hey, Joe Fresh Goods likes the podcast, and he responded, interview me in a few weeks after everybody has stopped yelling at me. And there you go. Joe Fresh Goods is a super fan. Real, recognized, real. So, of course, I'll hit him up in a few weeks. And when he's not busy, try to work out an interview. But either way, it was super nice of him. It was really nice to get a co-sign. I was joking to a friend that, you know, even if he doesn't listen to the podcast, facts don't matter because the tweets still exist. And she was like, why would you think that? Well, that's a thought you don't need to have. And really, it wasn't the glasses half empty type of thought at all. It was more me thinking through possible outcomes. And then in this outcome, there's a punchline at the end. So that is just how my mind works. And if you listen to the podcast, that's what you get. But also thank you to everyone who saw the tweet, replied to the tweet, was excited for me, was excited for the possibility of an interview. You know how they say the, you know, get your flowers kind of thing. You know, I was trying to play it cool, but it was nice to see everyone, you know, excited and super happy for me. So thank you. But for today's episode, this was actually recorded this past Sunday, May 15th, 2022. And this will be posted on May 19th, 2022. So that's why nothing that happened this week is discussed. But really, we didn't really talk about topical news or anything like that. We talked about other things. But let's get right to it. So without any further delay, let me throw it to the Sunday version of myself and introduce my guest. All right, my guest today, you may know from his YouTube channel or his Twitter space Sample Size, which is currently on hiatus, and of course his Twitter itself. His bio on there kind of summarizes his mission statement pretty clearly. It says, if it's happening in sneakers, I'll get to the bottom of it. And he might all be the only person on Twitter with more active beefs than me. Please welcome Sneaker Fetish, aka Kari. Kari, how's it going?
Going pretty well. That's actually a very accurate description. I love that. Thank you.
So, you know, I covered your bio there, and I called it your mission statement. And is it pretty accurate? Is that what your goal is, to like just cover kind of almost everything that it is going on sneakers?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny. You know, in the world of sneakers, there's so many avenues to take. And one thing that always concerned me when really like taking it more seriously and really deciding, hey, I really want to be a part of this and really want my voice to be heard, is to find a lane that's not already super saturated. Right. And it's, you know, a shoe is a shoe, right? Like a shoe at the end of the day is the same thing, you know, that's being shown 1,000 times. So I was always thinking, well, what can I do that is different than what really almost pretty much anybody else is doing? And I thought about, you know, well, I've always been really good at digging, you know, and finding details and being really inquisitive and wanting to know the why. And so I decided to, you know, start pivoting just from, you know, showing a shoe and doing the, you know, the par for the course, which was of course reviewing and, you know, showing, but to also really dig into these stories that, you know, nobody, in my opinion, was really talking about the way that they should. So yeah, that's how I took it on. And, you know, if it's happening in sneakers, I'm definitely going to get to the bottom of it.
You know, I said this to my guest LA3 too, and to yourself as too, you guys tweet a lot, like, you know, in NBA, it's called a volume shooter. And, yeah. You know, people might not be used to that. People are used to their own way it is. But like, really, like I said to LA3, I appreciate it. If I'm offline for 4 or 5 hours, I will check your guys' timeline first, because if something happened, you guys most likely have already covered it. So
yeah. That's true. Yeah. The metrics are insane these days. My goodness, I get these reports, and I have to watch my reports now that I'm starting to work with Twitter a little bit, and they do a 28-day rolling summary. And my last one I checked yesterday said that I did 20 million impressions wow. on Twitter in the last 28 days. I was like, I really got to find a life outside of Twitter.
Yeah, honestly, for me, like we're very similar in a lot of ways. And, you know, some parts are very different. I, too, also just wanted to get my voice out there and my thoughts out there. And I just kind of did it in Twitter alone. And but I have it separate from, like, I don't have any ambitions to be a content creator or a YouTube person. And I see how much work it is. This, honestly, this podcast, I thought would be a lot easier than it is. I thought you just turn on the mic and go, but it, you know, I'll stop and catch my breath and things like that. And then I got to edit all that stuff out.
Right.
So it's a lot more work than I thought. So, you know, that's my question. You know how sometimes when you send a work email, you send a long email, and then at the end is the real big question. So let me just ask the big question up front. Mm-hmm. You know, what is the goal for yourself here? Is it to ultimately, you know, work for a brand, or to create like brand campaigns for them, or to work for like a content platform like, you know, Complex or Nice Kicks or whatever?
Oh my gosh, what an excellent question that is. Wow. So, you know, ultimately, the goal would be to work independently, because I was just talking about this a little bit earlier. Sometimes when you're backed by a machine, that machine wants you, they want to kind of contour what you say for the sake of interest, be it partnerships, you know, money, you know, whatever the case is. And so I've always been the type of guy where I know how to be very political and I know how to get a message across. But I would never want to be in a position where I was told flat out, no, you know, you can't say this or you can't say a thing. And it's really something I'm passionate about. So within that vein, I think that ultimately the goal would be to do like brand campaigns or to work in partnership, maybe with certain media outlets. Like, you know, I would love to be a contributor or a correspondent to an existing outlet, but not directly work for one. I definitely don't see myself working for a brand, just because I think I've messed up too many relationships with the people that hire them.
Have you burned bridges,
Curry? It's possible. I mean, I don't think I have. Like, I've had companies reach out to me, and you know, this will come out very soon. But I had a company reach out to me that I've been very vocal about, and people who know can probably put two and two together, that surprisingly, you know, did something for me that I never imagined happening in a million years, because I've been so vocal with my critique of that company. And, you know, it's just insane that there truly are people that appreciate it at some brands. And then there are definitely people who are, you know, part of the brass or part of the machine at the brand that's like, nope, you know, this is a bad look. So like, for instance, Jacques Slade, one of the guys I looked up to in the industry before I came into it, he has Hard Pass, his show he does on YouTube. And I remember just kind of jokingly telling him, hey man, you know, if you ever want a correspondent, you know, for this show format, I'm your guy, you know. And I think he kind of took it in jest, but I was serious. Like, hey, if, you know, like if you ever want to throw me a segment, like, hey, and
you do have to shoot these shots, right? Like you have
to. Yeah, you have to, you know, I mean, one door may open one day. So, but yeah, you know, I think that's ultimately kind of the lane I'd like to carve out, is to be more of like a complex correspondent. Like, hey, here's a word from Kari, you know, and just be kind of like, you know, like how Speedy Mormon kind of does his things. He's known for a thing, but he works with so many different brands, like kind of within that vein, you know, with still being able to keep my voice.
You know, there's, you kind of talked about it there. It seems to be a politics, there's influencer politics and brand politics. And this kind of, you kind of just wrapped them all in at once. There's also this kind of like identity politics. I'll get into that part a little bit later, but so when these brands, do you think, like you said, you burnt a bridge, or do you think, are there people actively trying to bury you at these brands, or are they trying to like elevate you?
I don't think,
or let's say the content platforms, as I call them.
Yeah. Like, you know, at that level, I definitely think that there, you know, are some people that just don't care for me, and they're not going to, like, here's the thing, in this industry, people don't want to be like known as the person that like tried to blackball another person.
Right.
So what's going to end up happening is that no one may actively say, hey, don't work with Kari, but someone may go to someone and say, I need talent. And you know that Kari is the guy, but you're not going to pitch him. You know, like that's what that looks like, you know. So for my stance, it just means going around the quote unquote gatekeepers, or the people that like to be perceived as gatekeepers.
Is the concern there that they can point to your Twitter and you talking a lot on there that, hey, this guy can, he's a loose cannon, he will talk about anything and everything. Do you think that is a concern? Is that something you've heard?
It's something that I have heard, but honestly, I've talked to enough people in industry, because I really do care, you know, like at the end of the day, it's not like I don't say anything that I just, you know, I absolutely don't care. But the people that I've spoken to in industry have assured me, like, the way that I present information, number one, I always tell people, like, my mouth doesn't write checks that I don't get a receipt for. Right. Yeah. So, you know, like what I say, a lot of times it's verifiable, you know, and it's fact. It's not like what people don't realize is that on Twitter, I actually put very little opinion on my Twitter. A lot of what I tweet is rooted in fact, whether people like the fact or not. So with that, you know, like if I'm at a brand, or if I'm a person that is looking, you know, around and seeing, well, who's saying what, you know, on Twitter. Is this guy giving a hard truth, or is he, because the way people are perceived kind of as loose cannons tend to be that they lean into unsubstantiated opinion a lot of times. And for that, I really try to abstain away from that. And that's kind of, you know, again, playing the politics while still keeping your voice. It's a delicate balance though.
Honestly, like I have to admit, like when I saw some of your tweets early on, before I followed you or, you know, saw your YouTube or anything, you would see something, say, retweeted on your timeline. And out of context, sometimes those tweets would be like, this guy is like a know-it-all or something like that, right? And yeah. I have to admit, I didn't get it at first. And then I watched your videos. I've followed you on Twitter. I see your daily dialogue, the kind of, you know, the river of tweets. And I personally understood you better, and I got it, right? And it's like, okay, I see what he's doing here. It's like you said, the bio, if it's happening in sneakers, you're getting to the bottom of it, right? So I think that is what I see from the outside looking in, that some people might see a tweet here and there and then form their opinion on you based on just those.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right. You know, and that happens a lot. You know, you can be misunderstood in this position and I'm sure you understand, you know, as your voice grows out here, you're going to get a lot of people that, you know, it feels like the same kind of attention, but there's different reasoning behind it. There are some people that just don't like you being in the position you're in because they feel like they deserve it, or they're not there, or, you know, there are people that just don't like you as a person for whatever reason, you know? So yeah, I mean, you know, it comes with the territory. I expect people to not understand me, but my hope is And this happens on YouTube a lot, you know, like people say, I thought that you were one thing, but when I sat down and I really listened to what you had to say, I realized that you're actually pretty cool, you know? And I was like, yeah, I mean, I'm just like, people who know me, you know, behind the scenes and in real life and stuff, like they understand that, like, I'm literally just me. Like, I'm the least, you know, I'm this type of guy, or I'm this type, you know, like I'm the least ego guy out here, man, that I know. So
yeah,
misunderstood often though.
You know, we talked about, you know, the content platforms and, you know, the politics and stuff involved there. And, you know, for this example, the recent story with the trophy room, I can say their trophy room news. And you know how, you know, it all kind of stemmed from your, I think people missed that part where you were talking about them again, only because of the store that reopened and the raffle and how he may have been, you know, rigging the raffle towards certain YouTube content creators and things like that. And mm-hmm. someone replied to you, and then that's how it kind of blew up. And so, as I was mentioning on that, you know, in my podcast, and I think you have touched on it as well. It's like, I feel like those content platforms look down at those that are below them. Like the Jacques Slade that's come up, the Fomer Simpsons that have come up through YouTube, those are then at their peer level, and then everyone else is below them. And
yeah,
like I said it to you in a Twitter reply once, the people who could name check any sneaker designer and any complex intern all of a sudden can't name a name of someone on Twitter. And it's that's by design, mm-hmm. from what I can tell, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So it's like, then it's like, do you want to be a step forward into that world if they're already looking down at you?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, and so the only reason why I say yes to that question, which is a phenomenal question, by the way, the only reason why I say yes is because I've grown up being the kind of person that was very much a people pleaser and wanted, you know, and would kind of contour myself to be that person. And as I got older, and I think maybe when I hit 30, this was a thing, but I really, it became a lot more about being respected than it became about being liked,
right,
in the spaces. And, you know, I'll say this, yes to that question, as long as I'm being respected in the space. And unfortunately, too many times I see a lot of peers in this space that are totally not respected, but either don't realize it or do realize it, and they're just okay with it. So, you know, I'm not looking for anybody at, you know, just, you know, not to say them specifically, but just for the sake of the conversation at Complex, to come to me because they like me, you know, or, oh, we think you're a great guy. If you do, great, fantastic, you know, but I also understand I'm not everybody's cup of tea. But if you respect the journalistic approach, if you respect the way that I dig deep, and you see value within that, you know, to create a mutually beneficial situation that allows my platform to gain new visibility and allows their platform to actually have some truth in it for a change, yeah, you know, like, we can do that, you know. So everything is transactional in sneakers, I'm learning more and more. And, you know,
you help me, I'll help you. That is that what you mean?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. You know, and so that's really been my focus. My focus hasn't been, what can this person do for me? You know, like, and I guess that's why I'm kind of different, because, like, that's why I don't, you know, go to brands like, send me this, you know, like, I see people literally asking, can you send me this shoe, or can you send me this thing? And I don't ask for that, because I don't know. I guess I'm from a school of, you know, you show and prove. And so, you know, I've just been the kind of guy where it's like, I'm going to get where I'm getting off of my merit. And if people don't see it, I'm not going to beg for them to, you know? So I just, yeah, you know, I do want to continue going down that path, but I think, and I may be totally delusional when I say this, but I think that there's a way for me to do it that's built on respect instead of just likability. And hey, you know, maybe that means that I have a slower growth rate, which I accept, right? You know, because I totally understand that my growth in this space is going to be substantially slower than somebody that's willing to just play ball with any and anybody out here. But thankfully, you know, like the train may have slowed, but it certainly hasn't stopped. And opportunities have still come, but those opportunities have all been, you know, authentic, organic opportunities, you know, and I'm thankful for that.
You know, I think these content platforms make a huge mistake in that they're not elevating the next kind of generation. They're not bringing people on as correspondents. They're not putting anyone over. I always use wrestling terms. That's what I'm putting it, right? They're not elevating anyone because it's like the same faces, same over and over again. And, you know, some of them have the next generation coming up. Like the Caffeine app has, you know, the Sneaker Brackets and, you know, Jerlissa on Twitter has a show on there as well, too. There's definitely people out there and these people are in a position to elevate, but I don't see it. I see them always looking down and I always just think of it as a mistake, but I'm a total outsider in this. Like my sneaker opinion in Twitter is like, if I removed all that influencer stuff out of it and I'm just, that's why I end up just look like I'm just fucking around because I am fucking around. Right?
but in that you've created a lane.
Yeah. You know?
And people love that. They love your voice.
Yeah, and like I said, I've never been seated anything. Have you been? How often do you get seated anything? Because I know you've had stuff here and there, but I don't know the frequency and things like that.
Yeah, no, sure. So by and large, you know, I'll also say, you know, just in general right now in the industry, seating is down, you know, especially at Nike. And the reason is because they shifted over to the D2C or the DTC initiative, they don't have to seat as much. Seating, of course, was, you know, to gain visibility of product, and they don't have to do that anymore because the marketing is the products are marketing themselves now. But to answer your question, God, the last time I got seated something, it was, I mean, I get seated, like clothes from like small brands, like people, because on my channel, I'm always looking for new things to wear. So a lot of like small creators and small brands will see me stuff like Annie Benito, seated me some clothes I appreciated a while back. There's a guy named Toon Grimy. He seated me a t-shirt. I appreciate it. I wore that on a recent video. But from like a big brand, God, I'm not going to lie, it's been a while. Here's the thing too. You have PR and marketing contacts at these brands that are in charge of this seating. So for instance, I was getting seated from Greenhouse, which was
the Foot Locker.
Through Foot Locker. Yeah. Uh-huh. And so, you know, I had a great relationship, you know, with Victoria Chang over there, a phenomenal person, you know, and again, these are connections that I have with people that I just, like, I talk to them outside of sneakers. If they quit their jobs tomorrow, you know, I would still talk to them and be cool with them just the same. But Victoria was my contact over there, you know, and so me and her and I had a relationship. And through that, you know, I was getting seated through them. So that was probably the last time I got, well, I take that back. John Geiger just recently seated some product over to me as well. And John is, that's my guy, you know, like he's really a good guy and everything like that. So yeah, I guess that's the most recent thing I got was the Patron, collaboration that he just did for his GFO1s. But yeah, I mean, you know, it just depends. Cause if you like, so to finish the previous story, Victoria, ended up leaving, Foot Locker. And she went over to go work for, I think, like Bleacher Report or something like that. And so when I lost that connection, my seating stopped at the brand, you know, and that happens out here. So, it's touch and go, you know, it just depends. But, you know, every couple of months, something may pop in like, here you go.
Yeah. Your relationships are not with brands. Brands do not exist. It's with people there. Right. And those people can move on. They can, you know, they can be promoted or they like naturally move on to another company.
Exactly. It happens all the time.
Okay. One thing I mentioned identity politics and I didn't know how else to phrase it. And this might be a kind of a touchy subject. So I understand if you answer it carefully. you know, we mentioned Jacques Slade there and we mentioned, you know, getting inroads into certain, say, brand campaigns there. Have you, and I think you talked about this once on a your sample size Twitter space, but it was near the end. And you were talking about, you know, looking for a position, looking for an opportunity like this. And the feedback you might get is something similar to, I don't know if it was outright said to you, that, hey, we already got Jacques Slade for this. And you know, it talks into like black identity, black politics, and all that kind of stuff, that if we already have a nice black person here talking for us, we do not need another one. Have you felt that? And am I being canceled for this question too? That's my answer.
So number one, no, you're not being canceled for the question. I appreciate the question. Yeah. It's a much better question than can white people wear the Ama Meniere ear?
Yeah. And so thank you for that. I sometimes, if things amuse me, I take it and make a meme out of it. And that's just me wasting time on Twitter. And
no, you're good.
That totally came from you. And I know people were like, what are people are replying seriously to it? And I was just replied with more memes. So.
Right. Exactly. No, I love it. I love how you reply. You reply similar to how I do, where it's to expose and amplify whatever it is that's coming out of your mouth, be it dumb or good or whatever. Like, if you want the attention, here it is, the attention you hoarded.
Right.
But back to your question. So, yes, 100%. I've been told that from a representative that will remain nameless, from a brand that will remain nameless. But, you know, I have been told before that we already have Jacques, so we don't need your brand. You know, it wasn't really until I think I came along. I can't think of too many other creators that had been compared to Jacques. There are other black men that are on YouTube, right? You there's so many of them. Unbreakable and Flight Academy and Tony D. Too Wild. And, you know, you have all, you know, there are other black men, prominent black men that have channels with hundreds of thousands of subscribers. But the issue with a lot of those creators is that they tend to be a lot more kind of, you know, that loose cannon, kind of what we spoke about. You know, there's a lot of profanity in their videos and they're not as quote unquote brand friendly. These are things I've heard from the brands.
Right.
Well, we don't really work with these guys because they're not very brand friendly. But I mentioned this on Twitter and I'll mention it here as well. You know, I just think it's wild how in this world, you know, there can only be one black man that it can be the guy, can be the go-to for content creation. But in the other hand, you can have Kais, you can have Fomer, you can have Seth Fowler, you can have Harrison Neville, you can have, you know, Cam's Kicks, or, you know, whoever, you know, so many other people, you know, that are not black, and give them all opportunities and give them all partnerships and everything. And it's not a dig to those guys, you know, just like I said, you know, before, it's not a dip. Fomer's my guy, you know, like a lot of these people are cool people. They're making great content. You know, it's weird how in a space that celebrates diversity and celebrates, you know, inclusion, is still extremely exclusive when you get to a certain level or when you have certain conversations. So yeah, you know, I've been compared. If I had a nickel for every comment that I had that called me a mini Jacques Slade. And what's funny is that people actually say that like it's a derogatory term. And I remember thinking to myself, well, if you're comparing me to the top creator in this category.
Yeah, he's a cool guy.
You know what I mean? Like that's a compliment. Like if you see me going and having the types of opportunities, if I have half the opportunities that Jacques has had throughout his career, I'm good. You know? So, but yeah, no, it does happen though, you know, and I'm trying to break through. And Jacques and I have spoken, you know, Jacques and I actually have done things together before. It was a while back, but we actually, we collaborated on something for his Snapchat, and Jacques reached out to me to do that. Like, you know, he actually reaches out behind the scenes. He's a quiet guy, but he's a supportive guy behind the scenes. He really is. So, yeah, you know, it happens. I just wish that that brands and the people that were making decisions out here understood that there's room for two.
Yeah, it seems like they only want one version of it. Like. You know, the friendly, softer, clean version, and no one wants to see the loud one, you know, or like you said, a more explicit version. And because, you know, we are all things, people are all things, and you know, but a brand only wants the you know, the PG version, I guess.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Exactly. It's got to be brand friendly, man. You know,
Okay, I also wanted to talk about Twitter itself. You know, like I called you a volume shooter on there, but you're also be a volume shooter in when it comes to starting feuds, having beefs, collecting haters like you're like Thanos,
Infinity Stones.
How did that all happen? Why do you got so many haters, Kari?
There's a few reasons. Number one, I've asked people this question before, and like some people are just out to troll, you know, some people are really just out to just, you know, get attention, maybe because they're not getting enough of it in their day-to-day life. And I think people look at me as an easy target because I think a lot of people mistake my kindness for weakness. Which is funny because then I'll have these moments on the timeline and people were like, whoa, we didn't see that coming, you know, from you.
You definitely don't ignore and move on. You clap back, you fight back. Yeah. And, you know, I always appreciate when you do, and I like to see it.
And I will, you know, and I will, like, I'm, you know, I'm not gonna, like, I tell people all the time, you know, like, I don't block criticism. I block disrespect. You know, like, to me, like, there's just a level that, you know, if you don't like me, that's fine. But when people start to, like, disrespect you, and that happens from time to time, that's when I have to get involved, and that's when I can't really let that slide. You know, but why, you know, like, I end up getting the reaction I get, I'll tell you, you know, a lot of times I think it's because I think there are people that really just look at me as a bit of a challenge. Like, you know, I wonder if today's going to be the day that I can kind of break them, or I can kind of, you know, get them off of, you know, get them sidetracked, or get them, you know, kind of distracted out here. And, you know, I think people just don't like facing hard truths other times.
You know, honestly, like I touched on it earlier. I see, like you said in your bio, you're trying to cover everything in sneakers. And then I think people see that as a blanket thing. They might see, like I said, a few things out of context and then think that you're trying to be like, say, the mayor of sneakers or something like right. that, right?
Right.
Which, like I said, if you follow Kari and you actually see the YouTubes, you realize that you're not actually trying to do that at all.
No.
But when stuff gets, like, you know, cherry picked like that, that's from my sense of it. But
no, you're right. Yeah, people think that I want to be the king of sneakers, and I don't. As a matter of fact, my brand and my whole presence, especially on Twitter, has been to give everybody a voice. You know, like, I've seen what it looks like when people talk at people instead of talking to those people. And the whole idea of sample size was to make sure that I don't care if you have 5 followers or 5,000 or 5 million, you have a voice and your voice matters out here, you know? So a lot of times on sample size, I'll be quiet, you know, because I want other people to feel like they can come up to the stage and they can freely say what they want and their voices can be heard. You know, and that to me is the opposite of wanting to be the gatekeeper or the mayor of sneakers.
Yeah, you talk your sample size is your Twitter show, which is on hiatus. When is that coming back?
That's a fantastic question. So there's SockJig exclusive. There's two reasons why sample size isn't back yet. Number one, sample size was birthed out of a partnership program with Twitter that was called Twitter Spark. And they chose certain creators on the platform that they saw had potential and had a good reach and had good dialogue to create their own shows, their own audio only shows, and to test out the Twitter Spaces platform. And I was lucky enough to be one of those people. That was a 3-month long program that ended in February. So that coincided with the end of sample size as well. Twitter is still working out what the future of that program is going to look like. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm exclusively only going to do that show as long as it's through the partnership with Twitter. I've talked to, you know, some of the other people that I was doing the show with behind the scenes, and I've told them we're going to bring it back regardless. Even if it's just one day a week, it was originally twice a week. So that's one reason why it's been a hiatus. I'm trying to figure this thing out with Twitter, what the partnership is going to look like. The second reason why, sample size isn't back yet, honestly, I tell people it's under construction, but, there's been a lot of creative differences behind the scenes, you know, with a lot of the people involved, and to protect those people, I won't get too deep into it.
It's not just your show. You have co-hosts as well.
So yeah, it's my show, but it was birthed with, you know, a slew of, you know, friends of mine, you know, that wanted to come in and truly support, you know, and truly be a part of it and truly be a part of the conversation. And they've been great because they've, as co-hosts, have helped, you know, arrange mics and bring people to the stage and help kind of moderate the space, which I think you need. You know, but in the months since sample sizes ended, you know how it goes. You know, this world can get weird sometimes, and, you know, differences happen, fallouts happen. Next thing you know, these people aren't talking to these people and these people aren't doing this. And I still talk to, you know, pretty much everybody that was involved with it. But for the sake of me knowing that when sample size is back, I know that there will probably be some questions like, how come this person isn't really around and what's going on here? I'm trying to figure out how to navigate that and kind of let the smoke clear from all those, you know, things behind the scenes. I wish everybody the best. So when sample size comes back, if there's anyone that you don't see there that you used to see there, just know from Kari's mouth, I wish them the absolute best with whatever they're doing. Some people are going on to bigger and better things.
Yeah, I saw some, I don't know the full story. I think I saw a couple of tweets of yours. I know there was some sort of a fissure or break from, I think he was either the Kickback or Soul Food community and with their program. And then when you launched your own one, and was it mostly because of this new, you know, Twitter Space Spark program that started where you can do your own and you wanted your own thing, or again, what happened there? And, you know, we don't need to go on and on about it, 'cause I think you did cover it, but just wanted to ask about that.
No worries at all. Yeah, no. So, you know, actually, no, those two things were mutually exclusive. They just came with impeccable timing. What ended up happening was, you know, there were creative differences behind the scenes with myself and a few people from the Kickback. You know, those who may remember the early days of the Kickback, you know, we started it, myself and Jazzeray Lord started it, you know, really from the ground up. And then we ended up bringing a lot of people on, you know, a lot of new voices on, and it really, really became something really cool. So Twitter started getting involved, and, you know, granted, I was at that point able to start forging my own relationships with the contacts at Twitter, which was great. And I appreciate Jazzeray for being, you know, kind of the doorway into, you know, forging a lot of those relationships. But as it grew, you know, again, it's just sometimes you have a vision, and, you know, I had a vision and I wanted, you know, the vision to be executed, but there were a lot of cooks in the kitchen. And sometimes when that happens, you know, your voice isn't always heard, or you have to prove your concept because, you
especially
know,
if you make disagree it, with something, right?
Bingo, you know, you make it outvoted. And so as a result, I started getting outvoted. And then, you know, that turned into kind of some heated conversations. There was a Kickback space that was pretty infamous now that, you know, kind of bled into a larger kind of disagreement behind the scenes. And so I ended up kind of personally making my exit at that point, again, wishing everybody the best. But I was just like, well, if I have this concept, you know, and I have this idea of how I would like a show to go and what I would like a show to look like, maybe this is a great time to do it. And so at that point, you know, once I announced formally like that my split from the Kickback and from the Soul Food group, because the Soul Food group was being moderated by the same people that were working the Kickback. So it made no sense for me to continue being a moderator in Soul Food and to not, you know, be a part of the Kickback. So when I made that announcement, you know, and I talked to a few people from Twitter, you know, I was like, hey, you know, is there room, you know, for me to, you know, maybe pilot my own thing? And they said yes, you know, and thankfully, I'm sure the Kickback is doing well. I was blocked from the Kickback, which is a whole other story. But, you know, fortunately, sample size went on to do double or triple the numbers that the kickback was doing on a weekly basis, according to the Twitter analytics. And we're proud of that. You know, we wish everybody the best, but it feels good, you know, when you have an idea and that idea comes into fruition and somebody takes a chance on you and it works.
Yeah, no, I would see sometimes you guys would be on there for like hours and I'd be like, damn, yeah. Like, where's the time? Yeah. You guys need the Sandman from the Apollo Theater to like sweep someone off the stage there.
4 hour long spaces and 100 people are still in there. It's like, go to bed, please.
Yeah, no, a lot of times it starts at 5 p.m. on Pacific time for me. So that's just a bad time for me. And so sometimes I would check in at the 9 o'clock Eastern time is when I would check in. And like I said, that's when I had heard you say that. The part that we mentioned earlier, so it was crazy to me that actually like real dialogue was still happening 2 hours into the space, right? Whenever it is when I tuned in.
Yeah it gets heated sometimes. We've had some interesting people come across there, interesting guests. It's been a wild ride.
Yeah, okay. Finally, I wanted to talk about YouTube and you know, what's going on in YouTube. I always say on my podcast here that I don't really watch a lot of videos on there. I'm more of an audio guy, just that's it better for my life right now. But you're in there on Sneaker YouTube, you see what's going on, and you've commented on it on Twitter a bit that, you know, right now it seems to be a lot about first looks, getting it out there as soon as you can. Is that what the current state is right now?
Yeah, unfortunately. And I really mean unfortunately. You know, I don't like what YouTube has reduced itself to when it used to be such a platform that was really more so focused on journalism. You know, the YouTube of yesteryear, sneaker YouTube of yesteryear, was a mixed bag of news, of interviews, you know, of so many other things that were really cool. And it just feels like it's just been watered down to early look. Here's a shoe. This is dope. This is resale. On to the next. But yeah, that's the climate, you know, and I've been trying to interject, you know, the videos that are already there with these exposés like Soul Savvy or StockX and the NFT lawsuit or, you know, things like that. And those videos do well, you know, that tells me that there is an audience that still wants that content.
Yeah, just you know? Do what others are not doing, right?
Exactly. If it's hard hitting, you know, and if there's value added to it, do it, you know, go for it. I mean, I tell the it's wide open right now for creativity. It's literally thirsting for creativity on that platform right now.
And you know, the first look thing that I saw that basically drove people to wanting to show fakes. And I think you've mentioned this before that almost most first look videos, which are end up getting the most views, which end up getting most of the, you know, the money, I guess, are, you know, fake then.
It's such an ugly machine.
Is that what drove you to get those the yellow toe Jordans and the patent breads and have them as videos? Was that the driving force, the motivation behind that?
That's a black mark on my record, man. I'm telling you. But no. Actually, when I got the shoe, I literally thought that the shoe was an authentic sneaker. I paid. You know, like, here's the thing. Like, I used to tell people this all the time. It's very easy to get a fake shoe. Like, if you're on YouTube, if you do a stitch of content, you yourself may even get, you know, DMs and solicitations from, you know, all these fake factories and manufacturers. And a lot of times with YouTubers, because it's a great platform for other people to buy their shoes, they'll just send people shoes for free. You know, right. So I tell people, if I was into making videos about fakes, I wouldn't be paying for them. I would just reach out to these people and just get all my shoes for free, you know? But the fact that I paid for the yellow toe and I paid for the patent bread and a good amount of money, you know, really is what pissed me off, because I was burned by it, you know? I was like, hell, if I was going to show a fake anyway, I should have got a free pair.
Just to be clear, if anyone's not listening, Kari had a video of patent breads and yellow toes and they ended up being fake. But you did a video talking about it later on.
Correct. Yeah. I did a video on the sevens. It was the what were they called? The sevens that recently dropped. And Sapphire Sevens. And at the end of the video, I took that as an opportunity, honestly, because I felt like the video was a little weak. It was kind of a general release. So I took that as an opportunity to discuss also the fact that this shoe was a fake. It was something I was getting trolled about. It was something a lot of people were talking about. And I was really, you know, maybe the pride in me just wouldn't accept the fact that that shoe was a fake.
Is that why it took it so long to kind of comment on it?
It's possible. You know, it's the more I looked at it and the more people were talking about it, it went from just being trolling that was annoying to being like, you know what, maybe I need to take a second look at this. And yeah. And so I told everybody on the channel, like, you know, the subscribers I have on the channel, I want to have a real authentic connection with them. I don't want to pull the wool over their eyes, and I'm not trying to deceive my viewers. And with that, you know, I brought it straight to them and said, hey guys, I've shown you this shoe. I owe you an apology. You know, they were fake, and I'm here to expose that and to take my power back at the same time from people that felt like they had that over me. I'm not trying to, you know, deceive people, you know, or hide anything from anybody. If it's a fake, you know, I'm going to put it out there and then we're going to move on, you know, and that's exactly what we did.
Yeah, I saw the trolling too, but I just don't know enough from screenshots from a YouTube to judge if it is real or fake or anything like that. Yeah. Like the yellow toe one had a white Nike Air tag or black one. And then later the right. real one has a white tag, and that, you know, that kind of stuff is a no brainer, but other stuff it's just, I stay away from it. And so I'm not exactly the judge, but
sure.
Leaning into it is the right response. It's like, hey, here's the issue. Here's what happened. Here's my mistake. You know, accept my apology. And then who's going to anyone who continues to hate from that point on is, you know, doing it purposely.
Exactly. I haven't heard one word. Like, it's crazy. The trolling stopped. As soon as that video came out, all the trolling stopped. It was insane how that happened. So. Mission accomplished.
Yeah, you know, a question about feuds and stuff too. When do you know to move on? Like, obviously, that video is an example of when to stop with a feud. And yeah. We talked about the country club that shall not be named, which I think you did name.
Oh. That's on me, not on you. Well, we can bleep that out.
I might. That'd be funny. Yeah, when do you know to move on? Because sometimes I see things as personal, right? Like, they may have said, I think something like, you're a crock of shit. And so you take that and it's like, oh, it's on now. You call me a crock of shit, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. No, I think that, you know, when it starts to get in the way of your growth or development or opportunities, then that's when it's time to just let it simmer and let it die down. You know, the trophy room incident, you know, like, that was a whole thing. And, you know, there was a point where I'm like, okay, you know, you can feel when nobody else really wants to talk about it anymore. You know, you can feel when people are moving on past it. And, you know, when it's time to do that, you have to commit to it and you have to move on past it. And so, you know, for me,
still get hung up on it, if you're still posting about it, then it looks like you can't get over it, right?
Exactly. And I don't want to be that guy, you know. So, and I definitely don't want to cost myself another opportunity from not letting this go, you know. So, yeah, you know, normally, you know, if I get out what I need to get out, and usually, here's the thing, usually I have a point to make. And once that point is made, I don't have, like, when I've run out of points to make, I'm not going to keep going. And again, a lot of my points are substantiated. So once I've run out of gas, like, I leave it be, unless they want to have a dialogue with me or unless they want to, you know, continue to engage with me, which even that is monitored to an extent. A lot of times I've said my piece and I'm done.
Yeah. I've said this in DMs to friends and stuff. And it's like, I got my revenge. I made the video podcast episode. That was a mic drop in my eyes. Right. No one refuted anything I ever said. And, you know, I have the respect of peers, and that is ultimately my revenge out here. And, you know, we can look at engagement numbers of things that you do and all that kind of stuff. And that ends up being, like, you know, just a nice pat on the back too, that, hey, I beat that number over there.
Yep. Right. Exactly.
So ultimately that's how I always look at it too. It is like, I might take a shot here and there, but really I'm not a grudge holder.
Right.
And so that's what I was going to ask. Do you hold these grudges? And it doesn't seem like it from talking to you and, you know, seeing your tweets over time, but is that you? Are you, do you hold a grudge?
No, I really don't. And that, and you know what though? I think that that's what some companies understand about me. And I think that's what, that's the difference between, you know, people appreciating your criticism and, you know, people not, you know, or people looking at you as like a loose cannon if you hold a grudge against them. And no, I definitely don't hold any grudges against people out here. I don't have time to, you know, we've got other things to do. So no, if they hold a grudge against me, that's on them. That's a one-sided beef.
All right. I think that kind of wraps it up for what I had questions, but you know, I wanted to say, you know, I do like your content, your approach. I like that it's different from me. What example that I used on Twitter recently was like the StockX Nike lawsuit thing. You went into full details with the printout in your hand, and you know, like that is not an approach I want to take, and I like that someone else is out there taking that approach. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. No, I appreciate it. I really do. I mean, I could never podcast, so there's that.
And I can never YouTube video. Like I don't want to. I'd end up having to like clean the background and stuff like that all day, right?
Oh yeah, it's a labor of love. I'll tell you that. So,
but I wanted to say, you know, I think going independent, creating your voice out there, creating your name out there, earning that respect, you know, not having it, not assuming you're just going to get it is the key. I say to people too, I think you should start creating merch and things like that, even if it's in super small volumes. Because
yeah,
someone said to me in reply once, and it was a perfect summary. He said, you know, they like the socks, but they love you, man. Right. And so yeah. It was just like, that kind of shows that if you have that kind of support, then people will show up and support you.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that's in the works, you know, another exclusive for you. That's in the works.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, we're working on that. I'm talking to a couple of guys behind the scenes to see what we can do with that. So, yeah.
All right. Thank you, Kari. Thanks for taking the time to being on the show.
Thank you.
I think a couple of feuds may have started while we were talking here.
Oh, boy.
All right. I'll see you next time.
Thanks.
Once again, I want to thank Kari for being my guest today. And, you know, before recording, I asked Kari if there's any topic he didn't want me to bring up. And he said, no, go ahead, ask me anything. And, you know, I wasn't going to ask him any gotcha questions anyways or treat him like a hostile witness. But I felt like I asked fair questions and he answered, so credit to him. So thank you for listening. This has been episode 33 of the Sock Jig Sneaker Podcast. And speaking of a hostile witness, Your Honor, can I treat the listener as a hostile witness? Yeah. Okay. Well, go fuck yourself.